salty ocean, off where the waves roll free. The sparkling water rises, then crashes to the sea. Out amongst the breakers, you'll have no need to fear. It's true, it's the blue frontier.
Welcome to Rising Tide, the Ocean Podcast. This is David Helvarg, and since Vicky is still traveling, we're joined again by Natasha Benjamin. Hi, Natasha.
Hey, David.
Today, we're speaking with Kira Foti, brand manager with Atlantic Sea Farms of Maine, the leading aquacultural kelp grower in the U.S. They sell edible kelp to stores like Whole Foods, restaurants, and packaged food companies. They also have their own line of kelp, including seaweed salads and what they call sea veggie burgers. Plus, they're partnered with a number of Maine lobstermen to grow the kelp. Kira grew up in a restaurant family in New York and worked in sustainable land-based agriculture before joining Atlantic Sea Farms. But before we get into all of that, it's time for Blue News You Can Use. So, Natasha, there's always some troubling news to report on the state of the ocean, but since we just had our Blue Frontier celebration of the sea this weekend in Bolinas, California, let's talk about that. I thought it went great.
Yes, some good news for a change. A really incredible gathering of all our ocean people. We were lucky enough that the storm clouds lifted just as the party started, and it was really a wonderful time to gather with all of our salty friends.
Her Deepness, Sylvia Earle. We had a couple of tunes from Rambling Jack Elliott.
Amazing. It was great. And we also had Marin supervisor Dennis Rodini, who talked about how he's a local, which is amazing, grew up in Point Reyes right there in West Marin, and how things are changing and what the county is doing to really try to help our ocean.
And we were celebrating all the good we do for our coast and ocean. And
yep, and eating vegan tacos and even actually some seaweed vegan tacos, speaking of seaweed.
That's right. That's the seaweed tacos were introduced here, and it's a natural segue. So before we get into Atlantic Sea Farms and the booming seaweed industry, tell us about your own first connection with the ocean.
To start off, I have always grown up somewhat close to the sea. I am from just outside of New York City originally. My dad and his family were from some towns pretty close to the Jersey Shore, and we grew up going to the Jersey Shore all the time. And then on my mom's side of the family, her parents are both from coastal Atlantic Canada. I kind of saw two different sort of landscapes of the ocean because of that. I love the Jersey Shore. I have so many good memories there, but it's quite developed and the beaches weren't always super clean and they were very crowded. And a lot of times the fish you were eating wasn't always, from local waters, right? And then, in New Brunswick, Canada, it's a very different story. The water was extremely clear and very cold, right? It's a bay that comes off of the Bay of Fundy. So, the tides were extreme, highest, lowest tides in the world, and could basically walk the ocean floor when the tide went out, which was so cool because as kids, you get to explore the tide pools and it was an area that's very underdeveloped. Feels somewhat like incredible, but also empty in this way. Like, what is the economic opportunity there? Because there's, clearly some issues with the economy in that area. And so just kind of interesting to see how that also impacted, the ocean and the health of the coastlines there compared to what I was seeing in the Jersey Shore, which was so overdeveloped.
When that giant tidal bore came in Canada, people ate locally then, the seafood.
Yeah, there's a lot of access to lobster pounds there, but there's also a lot of shipping internationally. A lot of the fish that's fished in New Brunswick is definitely not super accessible in the region. So it's kind of interesting to see, like, they have this incredible bountiful body of water right there, but it's actually hard to also as well in New Brunswick to find a lot of seafood that is really from the coasts there. Whereas I feel that's different in Maine. And yeah.
Interesting. And also it was always striking when I was in New Jersey that, people don't eat quahog, clam and striped bass.
Yeah.
They're eating shrimp and salmon exported from farms all over the world. And at Blue Frontier, we thought it was odd that our ocean conservation events always had this sustainable seafood. And we started serving gourmet vegetarian, thinking that's more sustainable than sustainable seafood. And right. Now those vegetables are being grown in the ocean. So the UN's FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, says seaweed production's grown sixfold since the 1990s. It's over 35 million tons. They're projecting as a crop, it'll be larger than potato by mid-century. So how'd you get to Atlantic Seafood and what are you doing there?
I was working in, prior to this job, in regenerative agriculture. I was at Stone Barn Center, which is a nonprofit educational and innovation farm right outside of New York City. The restaurant Blue Hill at Stone Barns utilized a lot of the produce that was grown sustainably on the farm itself. And then the restaurant also sourced other regional products from small scale producers, one of which was seaweed that was used in the restaurant, coming from Atlantic Sea Farms, which is where I am now. And a big part of the nonprofit's mission was education. So they, every time they had a producer that kind of had the story, they'd invite them to present their work to the whole staff of the restaurant and the farm. And so I remember our CEO, Bree Warner, coming to do a presentation at Stone Barns, and I was completely captivated. She talked so much about lobstering, and I thought it was so interesting how you could kind of grow this, you know, sea vegetable that would have positive impacts on the health of the waters you're growing it in, and how that also affected other shellfish in those ecosystems. So I reached out to Bree and the team at Atlantic Sea Farms when I was moving. And I said, you know, I've had this background in working in regenerative food systems since I graduated college. I find what you're doing incredibly innovative. And so they, you know, invited me to apply. And I started off in retail sales at Atlantic Sea Farms. So for two years, I was helping support our sales team and all of the growing sort of retailers that we were seeing our products in, and pitching to new buyers, you know, talking to smaller co-ops and seeing how we can support our sales there, and working with distributors to, you know, get our products more accessible across the country to stores. At a certain point, you know, 2 years in, I was starting to get really interested in the marketing piece. And now I'm the brand manager at Atlantic Sea Farms. And I've been in this role just for about a few months now. But I love telling our story and overseeing the communications of it and really amplifying our work.
Amazing. So seaweed is definitely becoming more and more popular as a food product. You know, most people don't always make that association that you can actually eat seaweed. And I think that's probably one of the hardest things I can imagine for the company, to try to educate people on the benefits of eating seaweed, not just the health benefits, but also the environmental benefits. Can you talk a little bit about how you're kind of crossing those two worlds of using seaweed as something that can sequester carbon in the atmosphere and actually be a tool in our changing climate, and then also how you market something, how you market this ocean vegetable.
So Atlantic Sea Farms were a mission-driven regenerative kelp aquaculture company. So to get into sort of how we talk about that, we're growing kelp, which is a variety of seaweed that is native to our New England coasts. And, you know, we're doing it on these open ocean farming systems in these clean, cold waters. So to do that, we're looking at this from a social lens as well. We're partnering with folks from the fishing communities to farm this kelp in their off seasons from fishing, mostly lobstering. And then we purchase all of that kelp from them as a way to diversify their incomes in the face of climate change. Our oceans, as we know, are warming, right? In the New England, the Gulf of Maine is in fact warming faster than 99% of the world's oceans. That's kind of like an impactful thing that really sticks with people, right? That warming brings so much volatility to the wild fisheries up here, like lobstering. And so to buffer that, our partner farmers are growing kelp for us, which is fully a zero input crop. our kelp grows without the need of any arable land. It doesn't require fresh water, fertilizers, of course, right? No herbicides. It simply gets the nutrients it needs from the water that it's growing in. By doing all this, kelp is actually benefiting the environment as it grows. Kelp needs nutrients, namely carbon and nitrogen, both of which are in excess in our waters. So to absorb some things like nitrogen, you know, you're helping to mitigate the impacts of that on the water, but also carbon. Carbon's in excess in our oceans, right? It's actually causing something called ocean acidification. And so that can definitely impact the ecosystem below the surface of the water, right? You have all these shellfish that are kind of fighting with their energy against that acidification and how it can erode away at their shells, right? By growing kelp, we're absorbing some of that excess carbon as well as that excess nitrogen. And that really mitigates the impacts of climate change on these local water columns. So it can kind of be seen as like this climate hero crop, because not only is it zero input, but it's also supporting the health of the waters it's growing in.
You have 25 to 30 lobstermen who are also growing kelp for you. The conversation has begun that very well maybe a transition in the next 20 years from a lobstering to a kelp-based marine economy. Is that a active conversation? I know it's hard for people to recognize rapid change like this.
We definitely always want to kind of talk about that with our consumers, right? One way to support our coastal communities is to partner with them to adapt, right? You know, we're seeing data that lobsters aren't surviving at the same rates with these warming waters, especially in their adolescent stages and their larval stages. So, you know, because of that, it's like you're not seeing, you know, lobsters take, you know, up to 7 to 10 years to grow full size. You're not seeing the impacts of those rates decreasing right away right now, but you're seeing a lot of volatility. You're seeing years that are not as predictable as they were in terms of the lobster landings. You're seeing lobsters are actually, you know, moving farther offshore. So when you are lobstering, it's not as close to the shore as it used to be. You're seeing a lot of changes basically in that industry. And our coasts have been so dependent on that industry, right? It's Maine's known for its delicious, amazing lobster. And, you know, these economies need to get ready to sort of adapt, you know, when we're reliant on one natural resource. And so with climate change and with our environments, you know, drastically and rapidly changing, you want to think of ways that you can adapt to that. And kelp farming is very compatible to the lobstering industry because it can grow all winter. It grows really efficiently in the season that a lot of them are not fishing. And if they are, they're fishing less. And kelp farming, you know, requires work, but it's not like land agriculture. It's, you know, it's not a ton of, you know, going out there every single day, you know, working on the lines, you know. So it's definitely this efficient crop that works countercyclically to the lobstering industry, and it helps them adapt. And as you see, increasing volatility.
How has the response been from the fishing community? I watched one of the videos, and one of the lobster fishermen said, if you had told me 10 years ago I'd be farming kelp, I would have told you I was crazy. Obviously some of the lobstermen are excited about this opportunity, but I can imagine some of the fishing community might not be as supportive.
We actually have this kind of waiting list that we're working with at this point. We've had, in my own experience, even being here a few times, lobstermen coming from different parts of the state, driving right to the office and knocking on the door and asking how they can start setting up kelp farms with us. You know, our partnerships are very supportive. And I think once, you know, we started working in the with the lobstermen and in this community, the word sort of started to spread. So we're, you know, providing all of the kelp seed free of charge. We are helping the lobstermen with their lease applications, which they have to, you know, lease some of the ocean space from the Department of Marine Resources. It's an arduous process. We help them set up their kelp farm on their first season, and then we guarantee purchase all of the kelp that they've grown that winter and that they've harvested by that spring. at the dock. We're there, you know, ready to buy all of it. We're contractually obligated. Yeah.
So the company is really providing a lot of technical support for the lobstermen to maintain Maine's working waterfronts. At the same time, there's the consumer challenge, growing your market. Everybody wants a lobster roll. Everybody may not want a kelp burger. And let me take this in a different direction. What's the flavor difference? Tell me how tasty or it is, how much like a beef burger it is. What's the advantage for me?
You know, building the market for kelp is, you know, somewhat definitely about like talking to people about, you know, our mission and our work and its impacts on the environment, right? And its benefits on the ocean that we're growing, on the oceans we're growing in. But it's also about like, why eat it? You know, not just why support us, but why eat this kelp? And so 98% of the seaweed we eat in this country is all imported. It's not traceable, so you don't know the waters that it's coming from. You know, sometimes those waters can be contaminated. You don't know the labor practices that the seaweed's coming from. It's hard to even know what country it's grown off of. And then sometimes we see it in, you know, a lot of seaweed salads. It can be heavily processed, like dyed with yellow 5 and blue 1, the same dyes that make Mountain Dew bright green, right? It has undergone a lot of processing, whether that's also drying and rehydrating. And so what if you could eat seaweed that is, you know, coming from it's domestically farmed, coming from your coasts in this country, it's traceable. We're super transparent about all of the farmers. When you think about that movement, sort of know where your food is coming from. We're there as a brand people can really trust. And then, you know, kelp's a superfood. So if your seaweed is coming from clean waters, it's, you know, packed with over like 20 vitamins and minerals, and it has a very unique nutrient profile.
I get America First kelp burgers. Got that part. What's it taste like?
So to me, it's kind of like a really umami rich vegetable. It's naturally got, you know, this amazing kind of salt from the ocean. We blanch a lot of our seaweed so that it's actually less salty, but I love the kind of ocean flavor that's very crisp and clean. It doesn't remind me of fish as someone who eats, you know, vegetables and, you know, meat. I don't actually find that it has a fishiness, but more a very clear ocean flavor. And it's so good. Like, it's super versatile. We're not trying to imitate meat. We're not trying to make it something it's not. It's a veggie burger that is primarily, the first ingredient is kelp. So it's 30% kelp. And then it's green chickpeas, so it kind of has that more falafel texture, but mixed with that umami rich green. It's got, you know, depending on the flavor, we have basil pesto, we have ginger sesame, so herbs, you know, ginger, lemon, red pepper flakes, other things that just like sort of uplift that umami flavor. And then I'm like eating it, you know, not just like a burger, I'm throwing it on top of salads or in pitas. We're trying to make, just, you know, build the market by making sure that our products are very accessible and easy to use, right? You don't have to do a ton yourself if you're not familiar with using seaweed. These products are totally great for you. We also have products for people who love to cook.
I think people are getting more into it for sure. You know, it's interesting here on the West Coast, we have a lot of issues around our kelp and our seaweeds here. We've lost 95% of our wild kelp here in California. And a lot of people see kelp chips and seaweed products in the store, and it's a little confusing. Like, you know, we're losing an entire ecosystem here on the West Coast and in different places all over the world. But we're seeing these products in the market, and how do we kind of tell this kelp seaweed story?
It's like salmon, where, you know, wild salmon's in decline and endangered, and people don't get it because they can get farm salmon in the supermarket. 95%, as Natasha said, of Northern California's bull kelp is gone because of climate. How do we make that distinction and educate people between grown kelp and wild kelp?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something we like to make clear. Like, we, first of all, are very proud of our partner farmer network. And so all our packaging has each of our farmers on it. Our logo is quite literally a kelp line, so sort of showing people how it's farmed in the water, and it's attached to a lobster boat. So it shows you that, you know, we're working with the lobstering community here. And I think it's important, you know, to kind of always know where your food is coming from. And then part of that is, I think for a lot of people buying products grown on land is looking for, you know, different certifications, right? And like how it's grown and okay, this is, you know, humanely produced. This is, you know, organic. This is non-GMO, right? And so for us, we're basically also just trying to make it clear that, you know, our farmers are, there's literally a photo of one of them on each of our products. There's a map on our website showing where it's grown. Wild harvested seaweed, you know, it depends on sort of where and how much wild harvesting is happening. You can also support sort of the, you know, movement to not rely on the wild seaweed beds and the kelp forests, right? You can support this seaweed aquaculture industry, and it's growing, and it's really exciting to see the aquaculture industry growing in the US because it is something that traditionally for generations people have been doing in East Asia, right? And so trying to build that here and getting people aware that, you know, we can farm seaweed. It's good for all of these reasons. Here are our farmers. This is where we're growing it, you know. I think that just helps people sort of connect the dots. This is actually aquaculture. Talking about that industry and its growth in this country, I think, is really important, which is sort of what we're trying to do with all of our packaging, you know, our socials or all this storytelling that we're able to do is kind of around making people aware this is domestically farmed seaweed.
And in the past, most of the seaweed product went into cosmetics and kind of other food processing. Your company is really just on the food on a food market, not using it for these other purposes. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So our brand is Atlantic Sea Farms, and we make a line of retail products. So we have, like you were saying, our sea veggie burgers. We also have frozen shredded kelp called ready-to-eat kelp for the folks who like to cook and, you know, dress it themselves. We have a line of fermented seaweed salads. We have a kimchi with kelp in it, and then a spicy seaweed salad and a classic fermented seaweed salad. We've got kelp cubes for your smoothies. So easy, accessible daily smoothie input to get that superfood boost. And so we do also sell kelp as all of these products as food service items, so in larger format for wholesale. And then we also have a sales channel that is for ingredient, because increasingly we're noticing other consumer packaged goods brands kind of wanting to think about their own sourcing of seaweed, right? You know, of course, we continue to be transparent about our work in partnership with brands that use our seaweed as an ingredient. So we have, you know, R&D'd with skincare, beauty companies. We've sold our seaweed to greens blends companies like Navitas and Thorne. We also work with the nutraceutical brand Blue Bonnet. And then we work with even like pet food companies like Earth Animal.
Okay. And just to explain this, so I'm mispronouncing alginates, but the cell walls of a lot of seaweeds create emulsifiers that are used in cosmetics, toothpaste, even give foamier heads to some of the beer products we actively consume.
I didn't know that.
And so this is being used as an emulsifier, and you're getting into that market to have greater traceability, because almost all of that right now comes from harvesting wild kelp. And in Chile, where they're harvesting it for emulsifiers for China, 80% of the harvesting is illegal. So this is traceability. The other industrial use for kelp would be as a fertilizer, an additive for plants. And you see this in a gardening shop, you'll find it. So that's another big area. Is that an area you're heading into?
Yeah, we actually, in my last job, funny you say that, we actually used kelp meal in the soil to give it like a mineral boost, kind of like we need a mineral boost with seaweed as well. So yeah, we definitely, for the most part, our seaweed is going into our food products, and it's food grade in that way. And then, you know, you do have certain kelp farms that get struck with a little more, you know, stormy currents, or sometimes there's biofouling that can happen towards the end of the growing season. It'd be mostly like damage from very small snails. So there's things that can happen to the seaweed. For the most part, we don't see those issues. But when we do harvest kelp that feels more ag grade, we get in touch with folks that want to utilize it in their composts. And it also helps us, you know, be this very low waste brand. You know, we're using almost the entire kelp plant. There's totally different uses, and it's kind of great to have different outlets based on, you know, the kelp that comes in, because some years you get more storms like this year than others, and it can, you know, some of our farmers have shredded like blades because a tree went through their farm, like a full size tree from the coast. So yeah, it's great to have like so many different uses. It's really, the versatility of kelp is incredible in that way.
Your company, and you're on this fast track of growth that's happening across the sector. How do you adapt?
We've actually seen, you know, this importance on, you know, while there's these organizations that, you know, have started that can be, you know, funded to, you know, help folks learn how to set up kelp farms, or, you know, see what the ability is for kelp to absorb carbon, what have you. It's all important for the sake of kind of growing the industry. But what we also have to remember is you got to build the market as well for, to make it worth it, right? Not just putting a bunch of resources in people's hands and then saying, okay, now you can grow this kelp. And then, you know, then what, right? Is sort of the important piece. And I think as we see the industry in this country grow, that's important for all of the players, right? We know that it's important to have competitors in a sense, because you're helping people learn about the different ways to use seaweed and why it's important to be supporting the seaweed aquaculture industry here. You know, we definitely want to have this focus where you're really putting the opportunity also in the hands of the folks that are, you know, most impacted by the climate change and the volatility that comes with it, right? So you're kind of putting the reins in the hands of the communities that are really concerned about these inconsistencies in the lobstering industry.
I love the idea of small scale aquaculture partnering with the local fishing community. I think this is a beautiful story of how to be successful on regenerative farming. And just want to thank you so much, Kira Foti with Atlantic Sea Farms, for joining us today on the Rising Tide Ocean podcast. And can't wait to get a kelp burger.
Rising Tide, the Ocean Podcast, is a production of Blue Frontier, co-hosted by Blue Frontier's David Helvard and Vicki Nichols Goldstein of the Inland Ocean Coalition, with production support from Holden Hardcastle of Fluid Studios, Natasha Benjamin, and Nick Paz, and editing services provided by Charles Landon of Studio Cape May. You can find Rising Tide at bluefront.org or on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcast. And don't forget to recommend the Rising Tide Ocean Podcast to your friends and other ocean lovers.
Off in the salty ocean, off where the waves roll free, the sparkling water rises, then crashes to the sea. Out amongst the breakers, you'll have no need to fear. It's true, it's the Blue Frontier. Off in the salty ocean, off to the Blue Frontier.
Sparky, come here, buddy. Sparky. There you are. Good boy, Sparky.